why shouldn't smart women love money? If you get your money working for you, it can support all your other values, everything else you want to accomplish in life. Money is not a goal in and of itself. It's a means to give you opportunities and choices. So it's powerful in that sense.
Welcome to this edition of Retire Well, Retire Happy with your host, Annie Nelson, an Australian look at reinventing yourself for retirement and getting yourself retirement ready. It's always fascinating getting to know what people are getting up to in retirement, how they are supplementing their incomes, pensions, where they have chosen to live, how they are filling their time, what charities they are supporting, and what adventures they are having. Anne will also talk to experts in their fields, including investing, health, estate planning, financial advisors, and seniors' health care.
When it comes to investing, traditionally, it's been the males that have performed that role for the family. When we first start working, it's all about what can we buy with our money. And it's not necessarily what we're going to invest for our future. Now more than ever, women end up on their own. And they need to be aware of some investing rules. And today's guest has got a lot of success in her background. So who better to ask about advice for women and investing and having a plan than Alice Finn. Alice is a wealth management expert who was named the Giant by Barron's in its inaugural list of the top 100 independent financial advisors and has appeared as a top financial advisor on CNBC. Alice is the CEO of Powerhouse Assets, LLC, a firm she founded to help women become more engaged in their important financial futures. Among other outreach activities, the firm hosts Powerhouses, a woman-to-woman educational discussion about investing to plan for their financial future. Prior to that, Finn was co-founder, CEO, and chief investment officer for Ballantyne Finn and Company, Inc., listed as the number one wealth management firm by Bloomberg, where she grew the firm's assets under advisement to $5 billion. Under her leadership, the firm was honoured with the Growth Leadership Award by the Family Wealth Alliance and was consistently named by Charles Schwab as among the industry's best managed firms. Hi, it's Anne Nelson from the Retire Well, Retire Happy show. I'd like to welcome on the show today our special guest, wealth management expert from Powerhouse Assets and author of the book, Smart Women Love Money, Alice Finn. Welcome, Alice.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be with you.
Would you like to start off by giving us a brief introduction to your background in the finance industry?
Sure. So I actually, believe it or not, I'm an attorney by background, but I switched careers very early on because I realized I liked being an entrepreneur and was sort of ending my clients that I was helping. So I switched into financial planning and investing. And I grew a company from nothing under management to we had $2 billion under discretionary management. So we were making the trades on that and $5 billion under advisement. And we were doing it in a way that got a lot of attention. We were helping people on their whole financial situation. So Bloomberg ended up naming us the number one wealth management firm in the country. And then Barron's, when they were doing their first list of the top 100 independent wealth advisors, they actually put me on the cover of the article and called me the giant of the industry. So that was nice to, for them to recognize the independent financial advisor side of the industry as opposed to the brokerage side. So that's the part that I'm in. I really believe people should have independent, objective advice when people are not selling them products. So I stand in the shoes of my clients and help them figure out, if this were my money, what would I do with it? So I had another company that I got bought out of, and then I started this company called Powerhouse Assets to help women focus on their own investing, because I noticed it, when I was running my other company, that not enough women were paying attention to their investing. They either were delegating it to other people and didn't understand how it was being managed, or the money was sitting in cash and not really working for them. So that's my passion now. That's what I do through Powerhouse Assets. We do manage money, but the goal is really as a mission to get women to invest.
That's a wonderful mission to have, because these days there are so many women that end up struggling on their own. So congratulations for having that mission.
Thank you. For me, it's my way to contribute to the sort of feminist movement, because there's so much good that's happening. But if you don't get your money working for you, you're giving up real power to have an impact on your life and on other people's lives. So I feel like getting your money working for you by investing it is something that you can do without permission from a boss. The stock market doesn't care if you're a man or a woman, so there's no glass ceiling. This is something that we can do ourselves, and it's not as hard or as complicated as Wall Street in the United States wants to make you believe it is.
Mm-hmm. I love the title of your book, Smart Women Love Money. I believe you had mixed feelings about the title. Can you share with us your original feelings about the title and now your current feelings now that the book is out and helping so many women?
Yes, I'm happy to. So I have a wonderful publisher. Her name's Judith Regan. She's very good at what she does. And we had a much more bland title. I can't even remember what it was. That's how memorable it was. It wasn't memorable at all. And she suggested the title Smart Women Love Money. And at first I remember cringing, thinking that I didn't want to do a book called Smart Women Love Money. And then I started thinking about it, and I realized that if you said smart men love money, that seemed like a neutral, self-evident statement. Of course, men love money. But when you say smart women love money, it evoked in me and other people a different feeling. And so I realized that that was something to explore. And as a result, I ended up embracing that title, because why shouldn't smart women love money? If you get your money working for you, it can support all your other values, everything else you want to accomplish in life. Money is not a goal in and of itself. It's a means to give you opportunities and choices. So it's powerful in that sense.
Opportunities and choices, I think they're the apt words, because when we start off earning money, it's more about what we can buy with it, I suppose, and we have to have a change of attitude to even think about what can we invest with it.
Exactly. So having your money working for you can do eventually is you can hopefully live on the returns from that investment. And it gives you freedom to pursue your goals in life, to help other people if you want, to, you know, buy a home, to help someone go to college, to pursue a dream, potentially start your own company, you know, contribute to causes you believe in. So if you have your money working for you, it gives you opportunities and choices, and that is powerful.
Very powerful indeed. So the core of your book, Five Powerful Tenets of Investing to Maximize or Utilize in their women's own portfolios, can you share with us the overview of these vital concepts?
Sure, absolutely. So the book's called Smart Women Love Money, and the subtitle is Five Simple Life-Changing Rules of Investing. And I wanted it to be five so that it would be memorable. And the point is that investing does not need to be complicated. So these five rules create a foundation or a touchstone that you can keep coming back to in deciding whether you're investing in a way that I believe makes sense. So I'll go through them now. And feel free to interrupt me if you think that there'll be questions about what I'm saying. So the first one, of course, is invest in stocks for the long run. That's really important, because if you get the perspective, and by the way, this is all in my book, there's charts showing everything that I'm saying. If your great-grandmother had invested $1 in the U.S. stock market in 1926 in U.S. large company stocks, so I'm from the United States, so that's the perspective I have, but I'm sure it's similar in many other countries. If you your great-grandmother taken that $1 and invested it before the Great Depression here, so it would have gone down and then back up, today that $1 would be worth over $7,000. That, to me, is pretty amazing. And to make it even more amazing, if your great-grandmother had invested $1 in U.S. small company stocks, so those are companies that have not turned into the Amazons or the Googles or the Apples of the world, but companies that are small and hopefully growing, that $1 today would be worth over $22,000. Mm-hmm. So just think about that. $1 turning into either $7,000 or $22,000. That's pretty phenomenal. In contrast, if your great-grandmother had not invested in stocks and instead invested in U.S. long-term government bonds, that $1 would only be worth $137 today. And if she'd invested in short-term government bonds, that $1 would only be worth about $21. So think of the difference between something over a very long period of time being worth only $21 or $137 versus $7,000 or $22,000. And it just gives you the perspective that if you want to earn a good return in the long run, stocks are where it's at.
Yes. It seems as though it's got it over fixed income products.
Exactly. And, you know, the reason to think about why would that be? Why is it that investing in stocks makes sense for the long run? Well, what are you investing in when you're investing in a stock, in the stock of a company, the shares of a company? I believe what you're doing is investing in people's productivity and innovation. They've got an idea that they want to grow and into a company that's going to help other people. So I believe that I'd rather invest in that and have a huge upside if they succeed than invest in what the contrast, a fixed income product where you're just loaning someone money and there's a fixed return you're going to get. You don't get the upside of their productivity and innovation. You're getting a fixed return. So that's the difference.
Mm. Yes, and the banks don't pay you much interest anymore.
Right. I mean, it's going up a little bit, but you're absolutely right. You're right. Especially the last several years, it's been really pathetic what banks pay. And while it's true, stocks are much more risky than fixed income bonds and cash, much more risky than that. And you can look in my book and see a chart that will show you that there's volatility. It goes up and down and up and down. But the long-term trend is up. And that makes sense to me because, again, I believe that people will continue to be innovative and productive around the world. And I want to invest around the world, including in the United States, in Australia, in emerging markets, in developed countries in Europe, in emerging countries in Europe, in Africa. I want to invest in people's productivity and innovation all over the world. And you can do that by investing in public stocks.
Sounds like a wonderful plan.
Okay, so that's rule number one. Rule number two is to, this is important, the most important strategic thing you can do when you're investing is to allocate your assets. And what I mean by that is you want to come up with a percentage plan. So you're going to decide what percent you're going to put in stocks and what percent you're going to put in fixed income. And again, fixed income is bonds and cash. And that's a decision about how much risk you can and want to take on. And my book talks about how to decide that. And then within the stock portion, you want to invest in many different categories of stocks. For people living in the United States, you want to invest a lot in U.S. stocks, but also some in international. Same thing in Australia. You want to invest in some Australian stocks, but also some international stocks. You want to decide what categories of stocks you want to invest in and then in what percentages. That asset allocation plan is the most important decision you'll make. That's very different than what individual stocks people will buy, which is how people usually think about it. To me, that's not the way to think about it. You want to think about big categories and what percentages you're going to put into those categories. So that's rule number two, allocate your assets. Rule number three is once you've decided your asset allocation, you should implement it with index funds. So rather than buying, you know, individual stocks, I recommend that people buy index funds for every category of stocks they want to invest in. So what's an index fund? An index fund is a basket of stocks that covers the whole category. So for example, the most famous index in the United States is the S&P 500. And so people would buy an S&P 500 index fund and they're getting all 500 stocks with one trade. And by the way, those 500 stocks, the value put together of those 500 stocks represents about 80% of the U.S. stock market. So I believe even people in Australia should invest a portion of their money, and maybe even a significant portion, in the S&P 500 because it covers 80% of the publicly available stock market value of the United States. To say it again, an index fund invests, it's a basket of stocks that covers the whole category that you want to invest in.
Mm-hmm. And you don't believe in investing in individual companies.
Exactly. It's very hard to determine which companies are going to do well and which companies aren't. And it's all based on information that's already out there. So you're having to outsmart what's already out there. What's already out there and you're hearing about is already priced into individual companies. And they're risky because something crazy can happen to an individual company and it can plummet. So you're taking on individual company risk that you don't need to be taking on. And that's why I recommend index funds. I will say one thing. There are people that really enjoy investing in individual stocks. So I tell them to have what I call an entertainment account, where they'll set up a separate account. And when they get a stock tip or they get an inclination to invest in something, invest that money in it. And my experience, both for myself and for my clients and friends that do this, is that over time they get bored or tired or that portfolio doesn't do as well as just investing for the long run in index funds.
How many index funds are there out there?
Good question. There's many. Whatever category you can think of, there's an index fund for it. So, for example, the categories that I believe people should invest in, and it really, and again, my book talks about this, it depends on how much money you have to start, about how many categories you should spread it among. Because you can buy, like you can buy the whole U.S. stock market in one trade, just there's an index for the whole U.S. stock market. But I think if you've got a significant amount of money, you can divide it up and you can invest in, for example, U.S. large company stocks and U.S. small company stocks. And then you can also divide it up even more and do U.S. large company growth stocks. And those are stocks that are growing very fast, but they're expected to grow fast, so they can be risky if they don't. And then U.S. value stocks. Value are stocks that are on sale. People aren't expecting them to do as well. So those are two different categories in U.S. large company stocks. Similarly with small company stocks. There's value and growth. And I believe you should invest in small companies, as I said at the beginning, because they, in the long run, tend to do better because the fact is they are more risky. So I should think you should have some of that in your portfolio too. And this is true, by the way, internationally. So you know, from my perspective in the United States, I definitely want to invest in Australian stocks, both large and small, because I want to be investing with the innovation and productivity of the people in Australia. And you can do that around the world. So there's many different index funds. And it's just a matter of coming up with your strategy and deciding what makes sense for you. And the book talks about how you can think about that.
Okay.
Okay. So should I go on to the fourth rule?
Yeah.
Okay. So just to refresh, we said the first one is invest in stocks for the long run. The second is allocate your assets, decide what categories you're going to invest in and in what percentages, and then implement it with index funds. So now that you've got your portfolio and you've invested in index funds, the fourth rule is rebalance regularly. What that means is at least once a year, and I usually do this in November, although this year I did it in December too because the stock market went down so much, it was a good time to rebalance. You want to look at what your target strategic asset allocation was. And because things do differently at different times, you want to rebalance back to that. So, for example, if 1 year U.S. stocks do really well and emerging market stocks, those are countries that are developing like China, Russia, India, et cetera. If those didn't do well, then what you'd do is you, at the end of the year, you'd take some money off the table from the United States and you'd put it into emerging markets so that you'd rebalance back to your target asset allocation. And to me, that's the simplest way to sell high and buy low, because unemotionally, you're selling what did well, taking some off the table, and putting it into something that didn't do as well. And the funny thing about that is that's sort of counterintuitive, right? You're selling things that did well. Why would you do that? But everything that I see, and there's a chart in the book that shows that that is pretty random what does well what year, and eventually things do tend to revert to the mean. So things that have done really well 1 year likely won't do as well continuing in the future. So you want to rebalance so that you're selling high and buying low constantly. So do that at least once a year. And if the market moves a lot, do that again.
Just before we go on, you suggested November, and for those of us that have a different financial year, you're suggesting November because of your financial year?
Good point. What is the financial year in Australia? I'm sorry that I don't know.
July to June.
Oh, actually that makes more sense. Okay. So then in, I'd say maybe May in Australia, you would start looking to rebalance, assuming you've got the same tax rules, the similar tax rules. In the United States, you can do what's called tax loss harvesting. You can sell something at a loss and match it against what you had as a gain. So at the end of our year, I'm trying to make sure that people's taxes get reduced by doing that process. And I don't know if you can do something similar in Australia, but toward the end of the year is always a good time to look at your portfolio and rebalance.
Okay. And the rebalancing, I picked up in there, you said the word unemotionally, because that is our problem, isn't it? Sometimes we don't know when to sell and we hold on to some stocks for too long.
Right. That's right.
Hoping it'll come back again.
Exactly. Yes. I think one of the reasons I love what I do is that it's a combination of human psychology and strategy and math. And I like, believe it or not, I like strategy and math, but I also have a background in psychology. And the combination to me is what's fascinating, because I'm working with individuals. You know, we all have sort of interesting psychology that when it relates to the markets, the most important thing is to try not to let your psychology influence your plan. That's really when I really do my job, is when the markets are going down and I try and keep people to stick to the plan, because the inclination would be to sell when the markets go down. And I'm trying to tell people, no, we have a plan. Let's look at the long run. We're going to stick with it. And that's my goal, is to help people stick with the plan. And similarly, when the market does really well, for me to take some off the table of things that have done well, people would normally say, why are you doing that? But I'm explaining that's the strategy. We're not going to get emotional about this. So good, very good question. Okay, so then the final rule is keep your fees down. Keep the fees low, because a chart in the book shows is that if you pay 2% more in fees than you should, in a period when most people are trying to invest for, say, 30 or 40 years for trying to invest for retirement, you'll lose as much as half your net worth to fees. I call it negative compounding. So if you're paying 3% in fees and you really only need to pay 1% in fees, that is a negative 2% every year that you're losing to fees that most people don't even know they're paying it. And it really is a huge drag on your performance. So the first thing is to figure out what you're actually paying in fees. So what are you paying to potentially an advisor? What are you paying for the products that you're being put in? What are you paying for the trading fees, et cetera? Ask whoever you're working with, or ask whoever you can, what the fees are of how you're investing, and keep those low. That's something you can actually control, as opposed to the stock market. We can't control that other than coming up with a strategy and a smart strategy and sticking with it. When it comes to fees, you should know what they are and you should make sure that you keep them low.
I know in Australia, a lot of people got caught by a company called Storm Financial, and they had very high fees, but they were encouraging clients to borrow money to invest, and it all was going swimmingly okay while everything was going up, but it all came to a crashing halt when when the stock market wasn't going well, and a lot of people got caught, that they had very high fees as well.
Yes. Okay. So that's a really good point. So one of the things to look for is if someone's charging a lot in fees, that can be a real red flag, right? So make sure that they're transparent and they tell you what their fees are. Okay. Because it's really important to understand what the fees are. And if someone's being transparent and they'll tell you what the fees are and they're not that high, that's a good sign. The other thing is, I don't believe in hedge funds, which, by the way, the name is misleading. It's a misnomer. A hedge fund they don't always hedge. They can be investing in many different ways. My observation is the only thing that unites all hedge funds is that they've got pretty high fees. They'll charge you 2% just to be in their fund, and then they'll usually take 20% of what you earn. That is way too much money. So I don't recommend people invest in hedge funds at all. And then anything that you really don't understand, you should not be investing in. So that's why, again, I like to have these five simple rules, because if you're investing this way, you'll understand what you're doing and it will more likely be able to stick with the plan. So things like Bitcoin, I don't know if people in Australia were into Bitcoin recently. Was that a sort of a craze in Australia as well as in the United States?
Yeah, there was a little bit of one going on there for a while.
Okay, so I didn't understand Bitcoin. I kept telling my clients, I don't understand Bitcoin. And so we stayed away from it. And sure enough, it's now pretty much crashed. So things that I don't understand, I don't invest in. And that should be true of anybody. If you don't understand something, you should not be investing in. So my view is, again, these five rules are a foundation that you can keep coming back to. And if an investment you're looking at doesn't comport with these five rules, I would not invest in it. It's a way to really keep you on a path that hopefully will lead to a good investment approach for you.
It's very good advice. So would you just like to quickly summarize your 5 points?
Sure. So number one is invest in stocks for the long run, because that's where you're going to get a great return. Yes, they're volatile, but as long as you're investing for the medium or long run, so at least if you need money in 3 years, you should not invest if you need the money. But anything beyond that, preferably 5, 10 or more years, you can be investing for the long run. And stocks are where it's at. So it's a question of how much volatility you can take on. And so that's the first decision. But stocks should be the mainstay of your investment portfolio. Secondly, is allocate your assets. That's the most important investment decision you'll make. What percent in what categories? Then once you decide that, you implement your asset allocation with index funds. That's the basket of stocks that you can buy for really cheap. And by the way, in the United States, they're very tax efficient too, because they don't trade a lot. So that's also keeping your taxes down. So implement with index funds is the third rule. The fourth rule is rebalance regularly. So unemotionally, at least once a year, rebalance back to your target asset allocation. And then finally, keep your fees low. So know what your fees are and make sure that you keep them low. That's it in a nutshell.
Thank you. It sounds like a plan, and that's what investing is all about. You should have a plan and know what your target is.
Absolutely. That's right.
And for people that want to know more about you and your work and also where to buy your book, where's the best place for listeners to find you?
So I think the simplest thing is to go to www.alicefinn.com. That's my website. That will, if you'd like to buy the book, it'll be direct you to that. Or if you'd like to learn more about Powerhouse Assets, my company, you can go there, or just generally learn about me and what I'm up to. So www.alicefinn.com.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Well, thanks very much. It's been wonderful having you on the show today. And it's great that you're reaching out there and encouraging more women to take notice of and have some money for investing and providing for their financial future.
Well, thank you so much for having me. And I love what you're doing too. It's such an important show, and you're helping so many people. So thank you for including me in it.
You're welcome. This has been Ann Nelson from Retire Well, Retire Happy with our special guest today, Alice Finn. Thank you.
You have been listening to the podcast show of Retire Well, Retire Happy with your host, Annie Nelson. For more information on the show's guests and being retirement ready, pop on over to my website, www.annnelson.com.au, on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Until next time, be happy, stay healthy, and help somebody.